is we're talking about situational leadership. So situational leadership is from Ken Blanchard. He came up with this. There's a few other people that he's used to collaborate. It's been a form of leadership. It's been around a long time. It's really not actually a form of leadership as much as a form of management. It's a tool for management. And so as we're looking at it, like, you have to think about it as a lens of management, not as a lens of leadership. And so I think it's really helpful for us to understand where we're coming from. And so if we go to the next slide there, next one maybe, keep rolling, one more. Yeah, all right. So when we enter, like, when we get new ideas for leadership, when I was doing my master's program, they brought these three kind of concepts of biases to leadership, to new leadership, that really helped me just, like, prepare before class. And one of the things is my class was made up of about half of ranking military officers, which was really interesting because it brought a different perspective. But everybody in there was a leadership in their organization somehow. So one of the things they said was, hey, when you enter these classes, this is what you need to understand. As a leader, when you're exposed to new leadership, there's certain things that happen when you're exposed to it. Number one is you instantly have this thought in your head, like, I already know this. Because if you're a good leader, you've probably been pre-exposed to some of the things that you're learning. And so you start, like, drifting through the scenarios where you know this. And there's almost like a sense of pride, like someone's trying to teach you something new in leadership. And so you're not like, oh, I know this. You're not high and mighty about it. But there is this sense like, oh, I already know this. And so you have a tendency to kind of, like, either drift into why you know this or try to, like, self-build yourself because you don't want somebody else telling you how to lead. And so you have to kind of back those biases down anytime someone's helping us figure out leadership. And so it's like, hey, like, okay, maybe I know part of this, but I can still learn. And I thought that was interesting. And then I was shocked how many times I entered class and a professor would start talking and that thought would pop in my mind. Like, I already know this. I was like, oh, like, okay, I gotta back that up. I could, like, you know, stay focused, lock in, and not just take, like, my perspective. The second thing that happens is you envisionize every single exception to it. Okay, so, like, you just naturally, like, someone starts sharing a new leadership concept and you think of every exception that there is to that rule. And, like, that just, like, automatically destroys, like, your ability to learn in that moment. And then thirdly is you dismiss ideas based on the context. So you say, like, well, that's a great idea, but my situational context, like where I'm at, like, the area I'm in, it does not, like, that doesn't apply to me. And so anytime, like, as we're going through the rest of the day, or just these thoughts that people share with you on leadership, try to remember that those are the three natural things that pop up so you can kind of fend yourself against that. And so as we're passing out, like, this tool and this concept of situational leadership, what we want to think about is, Phil Mickelson here, he probably practices thousands of golf shots a day. Right, like, that's just part of his life, part of his routine. He probably rarely, if ever, practices hitting it off of smooth concrete. But, like, when he hits that situation, because he's practiced it so well, he's ready for the exception. And so, like, as you're thinking about your leadership, like, don't always try to process the things in your leadership through the exception. Try to process it through, like, hey, how do I create, like, consistent things in me in the way that I do it that I'm ready and prepared to, like, hit a shot off the exception, right, off the concrete, but because I've practiced it so many times in the grass, like, I know what I'm doing. And so here's the lens that we want to look through. So when we enter campus and we're walking on the campus, we're going to meet with one of our leaders. What we want to say to ourselves is, number one, like, I'm a son or daughter of God, right? And I'm led by the Holy Spirit. And they're sons and daughters of God. They're led by the Holy Spirit. So that's how we walk onto campus. That's our thought. That's our process. That's the kind of leadership we're using. Secondly, like, we are missionaries, right? Like, knowing who you are. This is why we're doing this. We're missionaries. That is what missionaries look like. That's the Chronicles of Narnia, Steffa. A little white witch action there, maybe. I'm sorry. That's the big sky for you. Things work differently there. Probably it's going to leave the room somehow. So we're missionaries. We enter as missionaries. Think about them as missionaries. And next, we're servant leaders, We're servant leaders. And that's who we are. One of the things, like, as we talk about, like, what's the definition of a servant leader? The servant leader is Jesus. Like, that's our definition of it. But in the handouts, so we got some handouts for you. Paul's passing those around. I put in a paper in there just on what it means to be a servant leader. And I felt like, so my program was focused on servant leadership. And I feel like the definition, it was just great to have a definition of servant leadership. And so servant leadership is constructed by seven virtues. And so the seven virtues that in this coming to you, so it's agapeo, love, humility, altruism, vision, trust, empowerment, and service. And so that's like what creates servant leadership. And so as servant leaders, if we go and try to lead people on campus without the heart of being led by the Holy Spirit, we know we're sons and daughters of God, we're missionaries first, and then we're servant leaders, like that's our attitude when we approach, like that's going to be the thing that helps us and takes. So agapeo love is really like our launching point in servant leadership. And I just felt like this helped me, so I wanted to share it with you because I think it'll help you. But it's a Greek, agapeo is another Greek term for love, and it's a moral love. It's this concept of moral love. And so agapeo love means doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons. So it's a moral love, doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons. And so if we are walking in agapeo love, that's how we're entering the campus as leaders, like that builds like a great heart, right, to engage the other leaders on. And so agapeo love is consistent in servant leadership to the extent that servant leaders must have such a great love for their followers that they're willing to learn the giftings and the talents of each one of the followers. The leader that leads with agapeo love has a focus on who they are first, then what they bring to the table, and lastly, how it benefits the organization. So walking in with an attitude of servant leadership, of having agapeo love on your mind and in your heart, like really helps us. And the call of agapeo love in an organization is to go far beyond seeing people as hired hands, but to seeing them as hired hearts. Servant leadership exhibits love by leading with feelings, and this fosters understanding, gratitude, kindness, forgiveness, and compassion. And this love leads to serving the best interests of others, illuminating the corporate culture, and freeing the leader from self-doubt, self-criticism, and self-imposed limitations. And that's how we want to walk into these situations. We want to lead with this agapeo love so that it frees them from self-doubt, self-criticism, and self-imposed limitations. And so as you enter the campus, you enter these conversations, we want to lead as servant leaders. So situational leadership is then a tool to walk out your servant leadership. Does that make sense? So it's a tool to walk out your servant leadership. And so situational leadership is task specific. So it's specified to the task. So sometimes we get it mixed up and we look at it from a big picture. We're thinking, okay, this guy's, you know, this is his second year on campus. So that's the situation. And that's actually not the way we want to look at this. We want to look at this task specific. So whatever like singular task or goal they're working on, that's how we want to approach it in a situational manner. So we start with SMART goals. So Matt kind of talked about it a little bit, but SMART goals are specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. That's what we have considered for the goals. And so as you're making each campus director that you're working with needs to have SMART goals. In situational leadership, like that's the column on the left, is there's definitely like the similarities, but there's two kind of things that I wanted to point out is the goals are still specific, but two, they're motivating. So there's kind of this different emphasis on motivation. What is motivating the person? Like, is the goal or task meaningful for the individual? Will working on this goal build competence and commitment? Will working on this goal add or drain energy? So it's still a SMART goal, but like just thinking about motivation is one of the factors, because that is how you address a situation. If you walk into someone and you're sitting down with them like kind of this time of the year, they've just come off of like their launch season, right? I mean, maybe Dan is quarter's exception, but coming off this launch season, their motivation, you know, maybe like starting to wane just because they're physically drained, right? And so as you approach them, you're going to approach them with a lot more supportive behavior than directive behavior. Does that make sense? And so we want to, the second thing is, is it relevant? So it changes realistic to relevant. Trackable is kind of like what realistic and timely are kind of rolled into, but relevant is the goal or task meaningful for the organization? Is the goal or task aligned with the organization and its goals? Is the goal or task a high priority in relationship to other goals? And does it move the kingdom forward on their campus? So these are the things we need to focus on, that you have to have a smart goal in mind before you address it, because the goal itself is the situation that you're addressing. And so as you engage in this, you need to make sure you have smart goals set up with them. So here's the process of situational leadership. On your handout here, if you hit this slide here, there's actually a typo, which is kind of funny because I pulled it from their website, the picture. So in the green box on the left of the big cube there, it says high directive. That should actually be low directive. On the green box, sorry, on the left. So on the bottom, it says high directive there. That should be low directive. And then on the red one, it should actually be high directive. So if you go back to the previous slide, thanks Dan for helping me out with that. If you, when we enter the situation, you're asking these key questions like, what is the specific task or goal? How strong is the individual's knowledge demonstrated with this goal? How strong is the individual demonstrated skill? How motivated, committed, enthusiastic is the individual? How confident or self-assured are they? And so you take the goal that they're working on, and then you look at it and you recognize like, man, they have like low competence but high commitment. This is probably where most of our interns live, right? Like, they're low in competence, high in commitment. And so we don't have to like tell them like, hey, get out there, charge. But we can say, hey, this is how you manage this situation. Like, this is what you need to do for your first week of cell group. This is what you need to do for this first event we're pulling off. I'm going to give you the directions, but I don't need to like pump you up because you've just come off support raise and you're ready to rock, right? So overall, they're probably going to live kind of in box one for that year. That's why we have CMIT directors, because it's highly directive process, right? But if we go to the flip side of the green box on the end, if we're dealing with someone that's highly competent, right, and highly committed, it gets super awkward conversations when you walk in and you try and like pump them up for something they're already pumped for, right? And you try and direct them for something they need no direction on, right? And I think we've all kind of experienced like someone like that, and it kind of feels more like someone momming out on us, right? Because they're like, hey, like, you know, it's like you're 22, your mom's like, get your backpack, get your lunch. You know, it's like, hey, sorry, Dylan, sorry. But, you know, you kind of have this feeling like, and I think that's one of the things we want to avoid with our directors is when they see us walk into campus, they're excited for the help that they're going to receive from us. And so if we recognize there's certain like caveats to their ministry that they're great at, Rob and I were talking this morning, Rob's great at one-on-ones. So I don't need to go into campus and be like, hey, Rob, like, this is how you do a one-on-one. But if I'm meeting with them, I'm like, hey, how are your one-on-ones going? Do you need any support with that? Is there anything I can give you, resources or anything? He's like, I want these books, but I don't have enough money. I'm like, okay, let's see what we can do about that, right? So it's like, I don't need to direct him in that, but I don't need to like give him lots of support. Like, you do one-on-ones, Rob. Like, he's like, nah, I got this. Like, but I can be there and still respond. So box number two, D2, is low to some competence and low commitment. And so this is like someone's probably trying on a particular task and they're just like not quite getting it. And so it's also tanked their motivation. So you have to come in, support, be really supportive in their motivation and their enthusiasm and their commitment to that goal. And then at the same time, give them some more direction. And then, you know, third box is moderate to high competence and variable commitment. And those are, and so we see that, like, it doesn't matter if someone's been on campus 10, 15 years or 2 years, whatever situation that they're walking through in that moment, you're going to find like different varying levels of where they're at. And so we don't want to just treat that all the same. We want to address that to where they're at. And the importance of that, I think, for us as leaders is that we have to kind of reel back within ourselves and we have to say, okay, I have a natural tendency to operate in leadership in one way, because that's where my comfort zone of it. Some of us are just super directive. That's like, boom, man, we're going to always, you know, be telling somebody what to do. And we have to reel back and say, maybe this isn't the place to be really directive. Maybe this is the place to be highly supportive. And so we want to use situational leadership, task specific, but also in a way that helps that person with actually what they need, not with what my natural tendencies are, but what their situation requires. No, that's kind of one of the things that I thought about it, but that's that happens, but this isn't it's not like this is the trajectory. Everyone goes like this. It's not saying that. It's saying you can actually jump like boxes pretty easily. You don't, but it does tend to be a pattern. Like as you gain competence in something, like you're growing in it, sometimes enthusiasm does drop, but it doesn't mean that you travel box to box to box naturally. That does happen too, but it's not like required that way. Trying to hear. So the handouts, let's go to agreement statements on that. So some of the agreement statements, so for box one, like D1, S1, this would be how our approach is. Since you haven't done this before, would it be helpful if I provided you with some direction, resources, and information? Okay. Or D2 to S2, since you still are learning and maybe discouraged, would it be helpful if I continued to provide you with some direction, and I'd also like to hear your ideas? Or D3S3, since you know how to do this, what would you need me to do? What you need me to do is listen rather than give advice, right? So just kind of in that mode. And then D4S4, I know you're taking the lead, but I'm here when and if you need me. So addressing like the situation that way. So in your handouts, I've put them in two separate formats. So this handout, the colored one here, is really like an explanation of how you approach this, is if you're the one reading the situation. So it gives you kind of some just different perspectives. Like as I walk into campus and I'm asking them about a specific goal, hey, how you doing on this goal? How you doing on that goal? You can kind of think through and try to, this can give you like kind of a rubric and just say, hey, like I think they're right here. So this is probably my appropriate response. And this gives you some guidelines for that. On the flip side of that, this is my favorite probably way to use this and really helpful for you, is this is something you send to the person you're meeting with, and you say, hey, I want you to look at 5 different goals, okay? So take 5 goals, chart those out, then I want you to go through these steps, 1 through 3, and I want you to figure out where you're at for that goal. And so the box of questions there, or statements on that box, helps them self-identify, this is how I'm feeling about my current situation. So somebody that's like been on campus like 5 years, they're rocking it, doing everything. They're like, hey, we're taking a new trip and we're, going to Mongolia. Like, and so they're like this, they're very confident, very excited about the trip, but maybe they have no, directive skills. So they put down like my expeditions trip, I'm D1 on this. So then it's like, what do you want me to work on? What are my goals? Those are the questions that they're going to actually ask you in this process. So they're like, hey, help me process my expeditions trip. Boom, boom, boom. They're helping you out there. Okay. Some of the other situations you run into is like, you got a guy you're working with. It's like, they graduated in computer design or computer graphics or something like that. And it's like, you don't want to go in and walk in and be directing them and telling them how to build like a graphic. You're like, hey, you're working on that graphic for SALT, right? That's one of your goals. They're like, yeah. And you're like, okay, you look at this. You're like, what's the status report on that? And they're telling you, here's the status report on those. Or here, let me show you the graphics. Do you approve, disapprove? But you're not like sitting there over their shoulder while they're trying to build like a graphic for your SALT, right? Or for your fall retreat. And so that's kind of how situational leadership hashes itself out. So this one's for you, thinking I'm the one leading the conversation. I'm the one asking them about a goal. I'm the one approaching it. And this one's for them, saying, hey, you send this ahead of time. Like, help me figure out where you're at. And then we're going to walk through kind of some of those questions in that box. And then step 2 is like during the meeting, and step 3 is after the meeting, they're filling out this graphic. And it really helps you like just process with them without you having to play guesswork on where they're at. And so it helps us with, like, when you're saying, hey, so how's your preparations for fall retreat? And they're like, good. So you send this ahead of time and they have to pick where they're at, what box they fit into for fall retreat. And then you can help them through those processes. So
there's got to be some more questions. I think it's, I was, as you were giving, I'm trying to read it and look over it and process it. So any more questions that you've done? Yes, right here, Jeff.
Well, that's what I love about, like, the three-step process that you hand to them, because it says, like, what do we prepare for the next meeting? So usually what you're talking about is conflict usually comes at the next meeting, because they've set up goals, strategies, and things like that, and you've walked with them through that. And so at that point, you're in the follow-up meeting. It says, like, the fourth box, like, what do I need to bring to it? What do I have to have prepared for the next meeting? They come, they're ill-prepared, you know, or they're consistently ill-prepared. Then it moves to Dan's class, right? Crucial conversation time, right? And what I love about this, I like situational leadership, because it continually pushes responsibility to the person with responsibility. And it helps us come alongside and support where they're at in their level of responsibility and what they're taking responsibility for. There's Ken Blanchard has a book. It's the 1 Minute Manager for Situational Leadership, and I like that. It's a decent book. I'm kind of in this story form, but I'm really like using his website. And there's different, you know, there's like pretty extensive trainings they do for that. But the website, you can just, you know, Google Ken Blanchard or Situational Leadership 2, and you'll find, you know, tons of his website sources for it.